Oklahoma, what it is to be the champions. Oklahoma, we've been it.
Excellence has been established by Coach Wilkinson, Coach Switzer, and Coach Stoops. It's my responsibility to defend that standard and to build upon that standard.
Welcome to the Oklahoma Drill Podcast with your hosts, Jesse Curtin-Bidden and Brian Clark.
Hello, Sooner Nation, OU Insider subscribers, Coach Brian Clinton enthusiasts. Brian, I gotta say, I normally have like a third thing that I do in this intro, and it usually just comes off the top. I don't think of it. I can't think of one today. Do you have one? I'm drawing a blank. The weather's nice.
Yeah, I was about to say, fans of Oklahoma weather changes, I guess. This isn't my gig.
So I called you a couple of days ago because the weather, people who live in the Oklahoma City metro, not just the metro, really all of Oklahoma, but especially the metro, I called you about all the stuff I went through trying to get my car protected. And I was with my trying to help my brother and his girlfriend get their cars protected because the storm was supposed to be awful. And you know what it did, Brian?
What it did?
Not a dang thing.
Yeah.
At all. It rained at like 11 o'clock p.m. It was supposed to get real bad at like 4:30, and it didn't do anything. And everybody in Norman was rushing to get their cars in parking garages at OU, and it didn't do anything.
Must be nice to get things right 30% of the time and keep your job and everybody loves you.
There was even one person, and I don't want to shame anybody, but there was even one person that was like, these storms could be as bad as the ones that hit Moore in 2013. And I was like, don't say that lightly, because that was horrific.
Yeah.
I was preparing for like a, oh my gosh, this could be like one of the worst storms in years. It didn't do anything, which I don't mean to sound so annoyed. I'm very glad that the storms weren't bad. I'm glad, for the most part, everybody was safe across the state, but it was a little annoying to go all to that trouble for it to not even rain. It couldn't rain a little. I don't know. Do I sound awful?
It is annoying. I mean, there's a little bit of a stigma against meteorologists for a reason. So, I don't know. I'm up here. I'm blessed with Travis Meyer, who is everything short of walking on water in green country. So, we're pretty blessed up here.
Travis is a saint. I want to say two disclaimers. For one, obviously I'm glad that property and people and pets and all the peas are safe. And I'm glad the storms weren't super bad. I know they were bad in some places, but like, I think overall it wasn't awful.
Right.
And, I know meteorologists have a hard job, but like, because now I know what's going to happen, Brian. What's going to happen is the next time there's a storm, there's going to be like no lead in. There's going to be like no alarm bell sounding at all. And then it's going to be awful. Right. That's what's going to happen.
Yep.
I didn't plan on a 2-minute rant about the weather. I'm so sorry. Welcome to another episode of the Oklahoma Drill, a podcast fueled by OU Insider and the Rivals Network. I am Jesse Crittenden, the guy that just complains about everything, apparently. And I am joined, as always, by Brian Clinton. Brian, no 4-hour marathons of open football practices this week. We just got 30 minutes yesterday, followed by a Brent Venables meeting, or he was available to the media yesterday. And there was a lot to dissect from what he said yesterday. But before we get into OU Texas softball, which we will get into, there's a lot of things to break down for what should be one of the best series of the year this weekend. He did confirm that Troy Everett is going to have surgery today, actually, for a knee injury that he suffered last week during the open portion of practice. You were one of the first ones, maybe the first one, to see that injury happened. Fortunately, it sounds like he could be back before the season starts, but he's going to miss the rest of the spring. He's going to miss the summer. His availability for fall camp is up in the air. Brian, of course, it could have been worse. He could have been ruled out for the whole season right away, but not great news for an offensive line that's still trying to figure stuff out, and we're already halfway through spring. What was your take on that news, and just what does this mean for the offensive line room?
Well, whenever the injury happened, I mean, it looked severe from the get-go. I mean, everybody was if coaches and players and everybody's waving for the trainers to come over there and they're sprinting across the practice field. I mean, it's not anything that you ever want to see, but you know, I may have made a little bit of a mistake last week whenever I said that it was promising that he walked off the practice field. I think I probably should have prefaced by saying I thought that the injury that he sustained might have been something where they needed to bring the cart in and get him, you know, get him off the field. You can still have significant ligament damage and walk on it. That's been proven time and time again. But whenever we found out that he's having surgery and that the turnaround is, you know, that's what, 5 or 6 months away. That's positive news in my mind, but that's also a very significant portion of time to be missing going into the schedule that Oklahoma is next year. So I think where it leaves Oklahoma at center is kind of, they're in a precarious spot now, because you've got Josh Bates, who is kind of being just forced into that role now, whether or not he's ready for it. Playing center is, especially for Bill Beanbo, is a lot more than just being able to snap the football. That's obviously the first thing you have to do, and you have to do it well, but there's a lot of protection. There's a lot of protection things that you have to come up with and help the quarterback with. And when you don't have an experienced quarterback back there, I mean, that just, it compounds the issue. So long story short, with Troy Everett out, who I believe was the best option for Oklahoma, at least right now at center, I think it leaves them in a spot where you need Josh Bates to pick things up quickly. You need Garen Hatchett to get available quickly, or you need to pull out the checkbook whenever NIL or whenever the transfer portal opens up on April 15th. So, yeah, it's gonna be interesting to see how Oklahoma handles that position, because it's vital. It's gonna be big for the direction of that unit going forward. So, not a good thing, but at the same time, at least there's a possibility of him getting back before fall gets here. So, I guess there's a silver lining if you look at it that way.
No, I would say, and look, I'm not reinventing the wheel. I'm not saying anything revolutionary, but it's every position on the offensive line carries different responsibilities and different. I mean, like, obviously a center is different than everything else, but like a guard is very different than a tackle. Being on the left side of the line compared to the right side of the line, like all of those are big differences. And now you're slotting in guys that, I mean, there already wasn't a ton of depth there, but now, like you mentioned, I mean, the first name, so Brent Venables mentioned yesterday, Josh Bates, Josh Sosa, and Garen Hatchett. Those are the three names he mentioned. I mean, Troy Everett's was the most easy fit there in terms of a pure center. That is what his, you know, that's where he's at. That's what he plays for the most part. Otherwise, you're now not only shifting guys around, which has a domino effect, because when you shift guys to center, now you're having to look at the whole picture. And that's just the worst thing to be throwing into the mix at a position group that you're already trying to figure out a bunch of different stuff. Right. And so this is a big deal. And for one, this is you're banking on Troy Everett being back, but there's no guarantee he's going to be back by the time the season starts. And even if he is, if he misses a lot of fall camp, that's a really tough place to be.
Yeah. Both physically and mentally. That's a lot. I mean, that's a lot to ask a guy to catch up with.
It is. And as important as every position on the offensive line is, your center, I mean, that needs to be rock solid from a comfortability standpoint in terms of knowing, having synergy with the quarterback to having command of that unit as a whole. You have to have command of that unit. To me, what this spells out, what it doesn't, it's not anything we didn't already know, but Brent mentioned they're going to be active in the spring transfer portal window yesterday. He didn't specify the offensive line, but they're going to be active in the offensive line or on the offensive line. They're just going to be. I would be shocked. I'm going to be shocked if OU doesn't add a couple of guys in the window. I don't know who exactly those guys are going to be yet, but I would bank on it now. They're going to add a couple of guys, and I at least a center. They've got to get some depth there, right? I mean, that's
coming into it before I found out that, you know, Everett's injury was indeed significant. I felt that it wasn't necessary for them to go back in the portal. It felt like maybe the pieces that they had, they could at least bring something together if guys could stay healthy, but you would still want to pick someone up if the right name came available. Now, knowing that he's out 5 months, it's a necessity now. I mean, you have to go out and you have to find somebody. You really have to find somebody that can contribute right away.
Like right away.
Which is tough, especially now. There's all kinds of speculation that the portal window that we're about to witness is going to be incredible, like unprecedented. And if that's the case, maybe there's more guys out there than typically you would see. I just don't see a lot of high-level offensive linemen hitting the transfer portal. Or at least guys that you would typically see Bill Beedenbook go after. He doesn't just want a big body. He wants somebody who's going to come in and work their tail off. And that's, you want to make sure you're adding the right person. So yeah, there's just a lot of moving parts to this. It's a tough spot for Oklahoma to be in, but the good news is I really do like the other pieces that Oklahoma's got right now. So it's going to be a tough position for them to be in. I do like the other pieces around the center spot, but they do need to find somebody quickly that can fill in that role there, and preferably somebody that knows what's going on and is ready to step in right away. Not a young guy. They need a veteran.
Well, no, I agree. And look, we really broke down the offensive line last week. Nothing changed yesterday in terms of my perception. I remain more confident in that offensive line as a whole than I was entering the spring. But you mentioned, and that's the important part here, is this coaching staff has stressed adding the right fit through the portal. And this might be maybe the first time they might have to loosen their morals just a little bit when it comes to, like, they need somebody who can come in and contribute. And I'm not saying you just go out and go get anybody. OU is very particular about who they offer, especially in the portal, but I don't know if it's ever been quite this dire. And I'm not trying to throw shade at anybody else that could potentially come in and help, or like anybody else that's on the roster, but like, this is the most important position, or the most the person on the most important position group, on the position group that had the most amount of questions coming into spring.
Right.
You've got to get somebody in the door.
Yeah. It's the situation, you know, I've seen a lot of people kind of going after the Coach Beedenbaugh again for the position that the offensive line room is in. And there's some merit to some of the points, but not so much that I would agree with the statement, because who could have seen the Caden Green situation coming? Andrew Rain was really expected to be back until what, midway through the season. There started to be talks that he was thinking about leaving, and
I'm still a little surprised.
Yeah. Like, you know, that's a guy you're expecting to come back. We knew if Tyler Guyton had the season that he did, that he would be gone. But you had a couple of other guys that were on their way out eligibility wise. But when you lose a guy like Rame and a guy like Caden Green on the interior, I mean, I don't think Oklahoma could have done any better of a job than they have evaluating and ending up with a guy like Fabechi, Wewu, and you obviously have some younger guys that are contributing. I really like what what Heath Ozyda has been. I like what Logan Howland brings to the room. I like, you know, Eugene Brooks is a young guy that's got a lot of promise, and Joshua Bates has shown. I mean, you and I have both, we've talked about it at the other practice sessions. There were times where he does look good. He has good reps. He's just inconsistent right now, which is just part of being young. And so, you know, they've got to go and get somebody else. But I just wouldn't, I can't believe there are still people that continue to jump at Coach Beadenbow and for what he does at OU. It's gonna work itself out. It always does. He is like the most consistent piece of that offensive coaching staff right now, outside of maybe what we've seen Emmett Jones become. So, I really like what they've got pieces wise. They need a piece or two more to really cap things off.
This isn't a, oh my gosh, everything's falling apart, there's no hope for the off. That's not what this is. What this is, okay, they need to add somebody. And in the meantime,
here's the offensive line standard at OU. Right.
Yeah. Like,
rest of college football is somewhere in this area. And because people are seeing this, I hate to put it that way, but the standard's so high. Like, it's not falling off, like you said. Sorry to intercept there, but
no, this is, it's not about saying there's no hope and oh my gosh, pack it up, this is gonna be the worst offensive line ever. It's not about that. It's just about saying this is the reality. Troy Everett's injury hurts, and not only are they gonna have to, is this gonna put a little bit even more stress on the guys that are still on that in that position group, but they're gonna have to add somebody. That's just, I think they will. I'm pretty confident they will. I just don't know who that is yet, but I think they will. But also, you've still got another couple of weeks of spring, got the spring game, and who knows? Who knows what happens with Troy Everett's recovery? But I think you have to assume that OU is going to have to look at other options. You can't bank on him making a really speedy recovery and being back for fall camp. You just, and even then, that's still a tough place to be. Even if he was available for the entire fall camp, that's just a tough place to be. So, Brian, I think, you know, we've talked so much about football. We talked like an hour and 15 minutes last week about football, breaking down every position group. What we didn't talk about is OU softball. We didn't talk about OU softball, and for good reason. Last week was a huge week for OU football. But you know what's a big weekend this weekend? It's a big weekend for OU softball. That's what it is. They are going to Texas, the number 5 team in the country, for the Red River rivalry, a much anticipated series, not only Big 12 series, but series across, I mean, in the college softball landscape. The first two games are on ESPN or ESPNU and then ESPN. OU obviously being number 1, Texas being number 5. And Brian, you and I are both going to be in attendance in Austin. We're both going to Austin. I got to tell you, man, I love Austin. Have you been to Austin before?
Been through Austin. I've always been told never to stop. I'm totally kidding. Yeah, I've never stopped in Austin. I've always driven through. It's like I've always been on my way to Houston or San Antonio or something further south. I've never made a stop there, but I've heard it's a fantastic city, and I look forward to spending some time there for sure.
Gonna be great. We'll be in Austin all weekend to watch, I think, what could be one of the most exciting matchups that we've seen in a long time. And what we didn't talk about last week, we didn't preview Oklahoma and Kansas, which I thought was going to be a lot more competitive. It wasn't. OU outscored them 30-4 across the three games. OU hit the ball as well as they have all year last year or last week. And I think coming into this weekend, that bodes well for how well they hit the ball. Then you add on top of that, Patty Gasso and Kinzie Hansen confirmed yesterday that Kinzie Hansen will be back behind the plate in her usual spot for this series, which I should mention starts at 5:30 on Friday. That's the first game. Kinzie Hansen returning is huge. She's missed 8 games this year after dealing with that knee injury last month. She's gotten some at-bats here and there. She actually started as the designated hitter in the third game against Kansas and actually played catcher, I think, in the last inning or two.
Mm-hmm.
But Kinzie Hansen coming back is huge, Brian, because this Texas team, despite not being great against Oklahoma State last weekend, they lost that series. They only scored two runs. This is a Texas team only. Actually, I'll give you a guess. Texas and Oklahoma and one other team are the only two teams in the country that rank in the top 10 in scoring and ERA. Can you guess the third team? I saw this. I looked this up this morning. I'll give you a hint. Oh, you played them earlier this year.
Duke.
Yep. That is correct. Nice. Those three teams are the only teams in the country that are top 10 in scoring in ERA. And this is a Texas team that's legit, man. What's your initial read on this series?
Fireworks. Where Oklahoma, if there's been anything that Oklahoma has shown maybe a tendency or something that can be exposed at times, they've given up some deep shots, and seen some balls go over the fence, and Texas certainly can make teams pay that way. But I mean, Oklahoma's offense has really hit its stride the last couple of weeks. I think, I tweeted this yesterday, on Monday, and had to make a disclaimer that it was not an April Fool's joke, but OU has outscored its opponents 126-18 in Big 12 play. And so they are just absolutely hammering the softball right now. But the thing is Texas is doing it well too. I mean, these teams rank first and second in batting average in the country. They both get on base just as well as anybody. And I think there's an opportunity for this to be a really high scoring affair. The difference for me, or the thing that I'll be looking for, is how well does Texas play the field? That's been their kryptonite for the last few seasons. I think that's really what's kept them from really hitting the same level as Oklahoma. They've always been kind of like right there. A couple of years ago with Jhené Jefferson, when they played Oklahoma in the national championship series, for the vast majority of the regular season, they continued losing games because they had costly error after costly error, and they finally figured it out postseason. And when they were fielding the ball well, they were incredibly difficult to beat. And I think that's kind of the same thing with what they've got right now. They've got a great staff, their pitching staff, which I'll let you kind of jump into in a bit. Their pitching staff's looked really well. Obviously, their ERA is right up there with the best. But I'm looking at the offense. I really like what both teams have done at the plate, and I expect there to be lots of runs scored in Austin this weekend.
Yeah, and Texas is averaging over 7 runs a game. They've been really good, and I'm not putting that much stock into last weekend in their loss at Oklahoma State, in the sense that Oklahoma State is playing really, really well right now.
Kilfoyle is pitching as well as anybody in the country.
She is, and those games were competitive, and they were in Stillwater. And I think it was more about how good Oklahoma State is this year and less about Texas just, falling apart or whatever. I do wonder, I think starting offensively, I think offensively OU has really hit a stride in Big 12 play. And I think particularly the last couple of weekends, they hit the ball so well, really at Baylor and at Kansas. But man, you look at this. You look at this roster. OU second, I think, in the country in scoring. Jada Coleman, after a rare slump to start the season, has just been hitting like crazy the last couple weeks. She now leads the team in batting average. Is that the most predictable thing ever, that Jada Coleman was gonna?
Has to be. I guess.
I was literally -% concerned that Jada Coleman was not going to bounce back from a couple of tough games to start the year. Jada Coleman's hitting the ball really well. I mean, OU has seven different players that are hitting above 400, or their batting average is above 400. What I want to shout out, though, is Alina Torres, man, who has become a legitimate, viable threat at the plate. And Patty Gasso has continued to alternate Alina Torres and Avery Hodge at second base, which I think is really interesting. That's still going on, and I don't think that's going to slow down. But Alina Torres has gone from somebody you didn't really think that much about to a legitimate part of this offense. And I mean, look, Tiari's hitting the hell out of the ball. Alyssa Brito's hitting the hell out of the ball. Ella Parker continues to be really, really good as a freshman. I don't really have any concerns about OU's offense other than Texas pitching has been really good this year, man. They've been really good. And Patty Gasso actually singled out their freshman, Tegan Kavan, specifically, who has been really good as a freshman. She leads them in innings pitched, which is pretty crazy. ERA of 1.84. You know, there's been some ups and downs, but the batting average, 0.167 for a freshman, is really, really good. I think she's going to make a case for Big 12 Freshman of the Year. I don't know. I mean, is there, to me, I think this is going to be, I think more of the focus, and I'll get to that in a second, is OU's pitching against Texas's offense. I think that's more of the question for me. I think OU's offense is going to have success, but is there a possibility Texas slows down this OU offense?
Yes.
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe.
I think I don't want to say that you necessarily would have to reach for that. Because I do think that there's a chance for them to do so. It really is going to matter on how well they field the ball, though. I mean, like, because yeah. Oklahoma, I think where Oklahoma really hurts people is they just hit the ball so hard, whether it's in, you know, not just balls that go over the fence, but balls that are put into play. It's incredibly difficult to play the field, to play the infield in particular against Oklahoma, because there is so much power off the bat for this team. So that could potentially cause issues for Texas infield. Now, I expect them to be, I would imagine this weekend will probably be the best version of Texas that we've seen, just because they're coming off of a series loss to Oklahoma State. They've been top five pretty much all season long. They were at number one for a week, and have been right at number two since then. And they go out to Stillwater and lose 2-3. So I would imagine they've been locked in and are ready to prove something. And so, you know, it wouldn't surprise me for this to be the first weekend in a little while that Oklahoma doesn't get double-digit scores in the game. You know, I could still see them hitting that 7-8-9 threshold pretty easily, you know, at least in one of those games. But what's interesting to me in this series is, despite what it looks like on paper, despite what the billing is being made out to be, Oklahoma's just dominated this series recently. I remember a couple of years ago, it was a couple of years ago whenever Oklahoma went to Austin and lost. It was just like such a big deal and they lost just one game. It was a Sunday game. And it was just such a huge deal that Texas had beaten them. I don't know. It to me, it feels like even this team that has been really only second to Oklahoma in prestige over the last several years still kind of looks up to Patty Gasso and the Sooners. So I'll just be really interested to see if they can slow the offense down, because I mean, think about how ridiculous it is that you just said seven players on this team are batting over 400. I mean, like, not 350. I mean, 350 in softball is really good. 400 is incredible. And with how Jada Coleman finished last weekend and what we've seen from Alyssa Brito and Alina Torres. And it's going to be a tough ask, but I think it's going to be a fun series. That's for sure.
I want to mention real quick, and I actually asked Patty about this yesterday, but I think one thing that's sneakily going to be interesting to watch is OU's actually taken they've been walked a lot more this year than they have in the past. Not they're not at the top of like the national leaderboards, but right now they're on pace for almost 100 more walks than they had last year, which is kind of crazy if you think about it. And this last weekend in particular, I mean, they just kept on getting walked against Kansas. It was really impressive. But Texas has only, their pitchers have only combined to walk 42 batters this year.
Wow.
OU, 66. OU's walked 66 batters this year. Texas has walked 42. Now, OU's batters have walked 186 times this year. So, I mean, they're still like tripling. They're getting like three times more walks than they're allowing defensively. But I do wonder, because I actually think OU sneakily has really kind of relied on walks this year. There's actually been several moments this season where the big outbursts really started because they loaded the bases on walks. Right. They have scored several runs this year on bases loaded walks. Texas has been really disciplined this year at not walking batters. And I do think that is something. Now, I think OU is going to score a lot of runs. That's what they do. But I do think that could be, like, it wouldn't shock me if we get to the end of the series and it's like all three of those were kind of battles and lower scoring than we thought. And OU only walked six times this weekend. Like, that wouldn't shock me. It really wouldn't. That's something I'm going to be, I don't know. That's probably something I'm going to write about tomorrow. Yeah. I think, go ahead.
I think you're right on point there. It seems, like I said, this one is just so, there's so much going into this game or into this series with Texas being 9-3 in Big 12 play. Like, this just feels like if Texas is going to keep its hopes of being one of those teams to host all the way through Super Regionals, they probably need to at least take one from Oklahoma in this series. Like, they can't get swept because they just, you know, losing 5 of 6 to Oklahoma and Oklahoma State is not a good recipe for you to be one of those 8 teams that hosts all the way through Super. So you need to at least pick up a win against Oklahoma here if you're Texas. And on the flip side of that, seeding matters. Like in the Big 12 tournament this year, with there being 10 teams, you know, I think finishing with one of those top 2 seeds is going to be a big deal. And so Texas really needs to find a way. And I think that this is going to be kind of a high pressure situation for them. And I'll be interested to see Oklahoma again, nation's longest winning streak. Once again, you know, they're kind of coming into this really hitting a stride. So I'm curious because I do think that the pressure is going to be on Texas's defense to try and limit what Oklahoma does offensively. And that's been easier said than done, obviously.
Well, and I'll mention just here briefly that I think the matchup that I'm really looking at is OU's pitching staff against Texas's offense. Texas outside of this past weekend has been hitting the ball really, really well. I mean, really, actually, the last couple of weekends, they've been somewhat limited. They haven't scored more than 5 runs in a game the last 2 weekends. But the season, they've hit the ball really well. But I do think OU is dominant as their pitching staff continues to be. It's slightly below where they were last year, but they're still dominant. They're still elite. Rank inside the top 5 in ERA. I am curious, like, we know at this point that OU's top 3 is Kelly Maxwell, Nicole May, and Kirsten Deal. We know that's their top 3. They have started all 12 games. Those 3 have combined for all 12 starts. But I thought it's going to be interesting to see how OU handles the relief pitchers. Like, because Kelly Maxwell went all 7. She has been more likely to go all 7 than Nicole May and Kirsten Deal have. And I'm going to be really looking at Nicole May, who has been good. Nicole May's been good. I think last weekend, well, I mean, all 3 of them did fine last weekend. That's not it. But I am going to be really curious to see how they do, and specifically Nicole May. She's had some up and down moments this year by her standards. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious to see how long Patty gives the three of them, how long the leash is. How long does she stick with them? Or considering it's Texas, it's a high scoring offense, it's going to be in a hostile territory. This might be the only time all year OU faces a legitimate road crowd. This might be it.
Yep.
How long is the leash? Does she let even someone like Kirsten Deal, a sophomore, fight through struggles? Or if any of the three of them struggle, does she go to Carly Keeney? Does she go to Peyton Monticelli? That's going to be what I'm curious about, because I do think if there's been one thing, and this is what I was getting to, while OU was dominant last weekend, they did struggle a little bit defensively in that last game against Kansas. And Kansas mm-hmm. actually not only scored a run late, but they loaded the bases.
Yes.
With no outs. OU's been fit to a couple moments like that this year, and I don't think you can afford to do that against Texas. So I am kind of curious to see, look, if it's a 4-3 ball game in the third inning and it's Kirsten Deal out there and Texas quickly gets two batters on, does she leave her out there? Do they leave her out there, or do they go with Carly Keeney? That's going to be interesting to me.
Yeah, and that kind of falls in line with what we talked about when the season started, that, you know, it was kind of against popular opinion, but it seemed as if Patty Gasso was going to go into this season not necessarily coaching to win every single game. It was more about making sure that this team is prepared for the postseason and prepared for next year. Because there is so much youth on this team that's going to be relied on next season, situations like this weekend coming up in Austin are vital. They're very, very important. And I think that this is going to be a situation where, like you just said, if there are some high pressure spots for someone like Kirsten Deal, it's going to be important that she feels that pressure, that she learns how to deal with that. And look, Oklahoma's built a 3-game lead already in Big 12 play. And so dropping one here isn't necessarily the end of the world whenever it comes to the Big 12 race. So I wouldn't be surprised if she does let them kind of deal with some of those things and figure it out, because again, these are the kinds of games where it has a postseason feel to it. Yes, you're going to be in front of a home crowd, you know, very likely going to be one of those eight teams, should be one of those eight teams that's hosting all the way through Super Regionals. And then obviously in Oklahoma City, it's notorious for being a pro Oklahoma crowd. So this is one of those rare spots where, as you said, there's going to be a situation that could be potentially hostile for this team. And I think that's really a good thing. It's going to be something positive that Patty can use to push this team forward and help them develop, especially those younger players.
That Oklahoma State series is obviously going to be a must watch here mm-hmm. in a few weeks, but I actually think we're going to learn more about this OU softball team this weekend than we will at right. any other point before the postseason.
I agree.
And I think if OU handles their business and gets out of Austin unscathed, I think that's going to tell us a lot. But also, I'm going to be kind of curious to see if they face some adversity, what they look like. That's because while I think this team should be the favorite, they've been playing out of their minds, especially since that their lone loss this year to Louisiana. I'm still a little curious. I still think they could certainly be threatened. I'm not, mm-hmm. I think they'll win. If you ask me to put my money on the table right now, I would go for Oklahoma. I like everything about their team, but I do think they can be threatened. And I'm curious to see, in Austin, do they get threatened against a really good Texas team? And Kinzie Hansen even said that yesterday. She said, we fully expect to see them in the World Series or the Super Regionals or something. But she specifically first said, I think we're going to see, we should see them in the World Series.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting, but look, we're going to be in Austin. You'll be taking some video and everything else for the YouTube channel here over at OUinsider.com. I'll be doing some writing. We will have a ton of content. I think more content than any other outlet for OU Texas this weekend. That's going to be the way to go. Make sure to like and subscribe here at this OU Insider YouTube channel. Make sure you head over to OUinsider.com, not only to read our coverage from this weekend, but so many other things. So many other things. Football spring practice still underway. Basketball portal is opening up. All kinds of things going on. Make sure to become a VIP member over at OUinsider.com. And we'll be back here next week on the Oklahoma Drill to break down even more spring football. and maybe some interesting tales from the road there in Austin.
This is our first road trip together.
That's true. That's true.
We'll be in a small confined space together for an unreasonable amount of time. So
with Ryan Aber from the Oklahoman.
Ryan Aber. Maybe he'll be mediator for us when we strap the pads on and start the Oklahoma drill
in the car.
The road. Yeah.
I was gonna say you and I could actually gang up on him. That's
Deal.
What I was gonna
that
say.
That works. Yeah, I like those numbers.
But we'll have some interesting tales from the road in Austin. We'll be back here next week for another episode of the Oklahoma Drill. Till then, see you next time.